Welcome, everyone, to the Waking Up the Workplace interview series. The aim of this series is to explore the cutting edge of conscious business. And we'll be doing that today with Barrett Brown. And it's quite a special interview this time because he's here with us in person in Duinlust, near Amsterdam, the Netherlands. So I'll introduce him in a second. In the meantime, my name is Diederik. I'm here with Jeroen, who's working technology or producing, if you will. And then there's Ewan on the call with us. So, Ewan, what's up?
I am so looking forward to this and having you here with us, Barrett. And we just did this nice little Qigong or meditation ritual outside and then in here. And it's just it's a real treat to have everyone here in the same space. I'm really looking forward to diving in.
It actually feels really different to me to be sitting in this space where we generally talk to people across the Atlantic mostly, and then just be here with the four of us. So it's quite special for me. So I'll just introduce Barrett shortly, although he's even sitting next to me. Barrett has been working since 1995 in the areas of leadership, sustainability, organization development in a dozen countries. He just stepped down as leader of learning and development for the Dutch Sustainable Trade Initiative, which is why he's joining us, because he's in the Netherlands, although he's originally American, as far as I know. And he has built large-scale learning systems there to accelerate social and environmental sustainability in global supply chains. He specializes in the intersection between organization development, leadership development, and global sustainability. And since 2002, he's been a member of the Integral Institute and has a lot of experience in working with the Integral Framework. Finally, and not unimportantly, he just completed his PhD in Leadership Development for Sustainability Leaders. And that's actually something that we'll be talking about today. So, hi, Barrett. So glad to have you here. How are you?
It's a delight to be here. I'm excellent.
Awesome. So before we dive into the interview, I'll just quickly remind you of the structure of the call. The way we generally do this is we take about 60 minutes of three-way conversation between Barrett and Ewan and myself, and then from there we'll have around 20 to 30 minutes of Q&A. So, you know, you can either just listen in and then send out your questions at the end. But it will be nice if you, throughout the call, can just share your thoughts and insights and maybe even questions with us live. And you can do that through Facebook. So, Ewan, could you clarify how that's done?
Yeah, so as you're looking at your computer screen right now, you should see a link up in the top left corner saying Facebook page. Click here to introduce yourself and ask questions. If you want to go ahead right now and click that link, that'll take you through to our Facebook page. And right there, you can just throw up your questions, comments, insights as we're here talking with Barrett. And then in the last section, we can pick some of those and pose those to Barrett so you can hear your question asked live. If you haven't already clicked the like button at the top, you'll need to do that to be able to post in your question. And for those of you already on the Facebook page right now, it's always nice to just say hello to everyone else, and then you can see who else is on the call.
Thanks, Ewan. Okay, so I suggest we dive right in to do what we're here to do, which is explore the cutting edge of conscious business. And since the theme of this series is to wake up the workplace and to explore what work can be, we'd like to ask with the question of what does work mean to you, Barrett?
Sure. So let me just start off by saying I really want to appreciate what you guys are doing here, because this is really, as far as I'm concerned, at the leading edge of conscious business, because you're out there looking across global thought leaders, global action leaders that are deeply engaged in this issue and inviting their insights in and then cross-pollinating that with people around the planet. And I think that this building of the collective intelligence around this topic and helping people to innovate in this area by feeding them with new ideas and new ways of being and new ways of showing up is really a powerful intervention in our global workspace. because there are so many people out there that are hungry for what really is the future of work, what really is going to be the next phase that we're going to step into as we're trying to figure out how to work together on a global level, on an organizational level. And by learning to bring deep consciousness into that space, people are just going to essentially get more and more hungry for this sort of material. So I think the recordings that you're putting out there are going to be important artifacts that people will be checking in on in years to come, and the connections that are being made and the ideas that are sprouting out of these dialogues are crucial. It feels to me like you're doing very powerful populating of the field, so to speak, with seeds and ideas and stuff like that. And it'll be fascinating to see what comes out of this.
Mm.
So your question around what does work mean to me, really, you know, we are very, very privileged in the society that we live in the Western wealthy world, to even be able to be asking these questions. There are 2 billion people on the planet that live on less than $2 a day. They don't get to ask this question. What work means to them is to get up and try and figure out a way to make money. I remember being in West Africa in Côte d'Ivoire, and I was way out in the bush in some town working on making the cocoa supply chain increasingly sustainable with the team that I was working with. And I asked a local guy, what really is the unemployment rate here? You know, what is it, how many people actually have jobs? And he looked at me with a really funny expression, and he said, the concept of unemployment here isn't even one that you can consider, because everybody has the opportunity to work, but it's to work the land. Mother Earth never turns you down.
Mm.
However, there are very, very few jobs that people can actually go and do. And so if your family is starving, you basically just need to go into the bush and start making it happen so that you can produce sufficient food. And so on one level, I think it's important to remember that this question really is incredibly context-dependent upon who you are and what life you've been born into and the opportunities that you've been granted and the opportunities that you've created along the way. So for me personally, I've been very, very blessed, and I'm able to ask that question from really the depths of my being and have a freedom to explore what work can be for me, such that it's fulfilling to my heart, fascinating to my mind, and ultimately satisfying to my soul. And so for me these days, it is work is doing what I am uniquely qualified to do.
Mm.
And what is it that life has prepared me to do throughout my years of being in the world of human and organizational transformation? And what is it that really I am perfectly positioned on the planet to do, and not to do things that other people can do? I was talking with a dear colleague of mine, Will Verry, from Australia, a little while ago, and he said, you know, don't do things that other people can do, unless you have to, of course, and lots of us have to do things that other people can do just to pay the bills, but really get to the place where we can be doing what is uniquely and preciously ours to give and to serve and to do and enjoy here.
Mm.
And get paid for it along the way. And so that's been really a fascinating inquiry for me recently, because I've been looking back at my life and beginning to see how I feel like I'm being prepared to be of service in these increasingly interesting and impactful positions. There's a great story that I was once told about life and work, and the idea basically is that your work is like a piece of origami, and as you go through life, you take a twist here and there's a fold there, and there's a turn, and there's an unfolding. And however, it's not until the very last fold has been made that you can look back and see the masterwork, the piece of art that's truly been created by your path through life. And so for me, work is trusting that that piece of art is actually in the process of creation and tuning in deeply to what am I being invited to do? What am I being called to do? How can I be on the edge of my own perceptions, my own beliefs, my own constructs about what I should be doing, and drop those and just be deeply present to what am I being deeply invited to do? And it's those sorts of stances, it's that commitment to being able to listen deeply and let go of the structures and patterns that have kind of brought me to where I was, but have basically then led to me to making some big shifts in my life. So I know you interviewed Rance Dagan last week, a dear, dear friend of mine, and I was fortunate enough to work with him and his organization to help them build out the organization development and leadership development program that they had there at Stegen. And at one point, I was looking ahead and looking inside, thinking about my annual plan for the next year, and feeling like it was time for me to take a step up and make an even deeper impact from kind of a strategic acupuncture perspective on the development of global sustainability. And that meant literally putting the intention out there, thinking about wanting to be in Europe and touching in with what was happening at the leading edge of global sustainable development and business. And then also being willing to say, okay, I have a life here in Dallas, Texas at the time, and being willing to pick up, move my entire family over here because an opportunity actually came through to come and do that work, and then start up in a whole new culture and with a whole new organization, take a pay cut from my cushy consulting job, and really intervene in a deeper level in a way that has helped me to grow and blossom. So I still am doing that sort of regularly checking in and trying to be on the edge of my own constructs and beliefs and listening as deeply as I can and responding to that. And work for me fundamentally means being that deep and that close to the present moment and what the world is asking of me, what my heart is yearning to do, and then what the market is actually willing and able to pay me for.
So one of the reasons that we kind of invited you to the series and to speak, you know, or actually not to speak, but to inquire with us into the leading edge of conscious business is that you recently completed a PhD thesis that I noticed had several keywords, which I'm sure we'll get into, but some of those keywords were conscious leadership, conscious business, and conscious capitalism. So that kind of alerted me to, hey, you know, this guy is also onto that, even though, you know, we've been having conversations about this, but I'm wondering, how did you get to writing that thesis, you know, maybe just as an introduction for people listening, what is it about? But also, what was the process towards, you know, deciding you wanted to do that kind of work?
Sure. So the work that I did is an executive PhD program that I've done while working full-time over the past 6 years. And what is essentially the dissertation was looking at what is the intersection of very complex consciousness with complex change initiatives. I was interested really what happened when really conscious folks engage with real-world complex issues. And so what I did was I went out and I found 36 leaders around the world that I felt had a very developed worldview a late-stage action logic is the psychological terminology around that. And what I did then was I gave them a developmental psychology assessment that really assessed their way of making meaning, that looked at how complex were they interpreting the world around them. And using the framework of Bill Torbert's and Suzanne Kirkreuter and the research that they've done, of course.
Both of whom we've also interviewed before. So for people wanting to know more about that, check out the downloads section.
So essentially what I did was I assessed all of these folks, and these folks also were real change agents and leaders in the world of global sustainability. So they were senior and mid-level executives from global multinationals with tens of billions of dollars in turnover. Some of them were longtime practitioners within the United Nations system. Some of them were leaders of NGOs. Others were consultants that were engaging across all three of those sectors. And they had all been working on sustainability issues for quite a while. And I gave this developmental psychology assessment to them, and then a group of them were assessed at the very latest stages of this developmental psychology assessment. So essentially, as complex a worldview as science can measure, I went and checked out those folks, right?
Mm.
And so I was fortunate enough to find 13 of them. And then I did a really deep dive into how do you design and engage in change initiatives, specifically for them in the field of sustainability. And so some of them were working with large-scale projects, helping a multinational to build out a global sustainability strategy across 250,000 people. Some of them were building an entire NGO sector within a West African country. Some of them were helping to build water strategy security for a large state in Oceania. And so they were really involved in these, oftentimes these very complex initiatives. And so I really went into inquiry with them saying, let's look at how you actually design these and how do you engage in this work. And that for me was very, very, very important to do, because I think that the work of sustainability, of conscious business, is profoundly related to the consciousness of the tool user itself, or the consciousness of the worker. And so I was curious, really, what are really conscious folks actually do? What does their work look like in action? How are they behaving? How are they reflecting? What sort of space do they hold as in their very being? How do they relate to their work? And then how do they engage? What sort of frameworks are they using to understand the complexity of the world around them? And so the research unveiled a lot of this, which we can get into a little bit later on if you're curious. And then folks can read the whole dissertation off of a link that you guys will provide on your site, I'm sure. Mm. And it's also available on the integralthinkers.com.
I think it was just put onto the Facebook website as well for people who are listening in.
Exactly. Yeah.
So actually what I'm most curious about is, why was this so important to you that you spent 6 years of your life, you know, while you were working, to, on top of that, do this PhD research?
So the dissertation research was the past couple of years, and the first 4 years were the kind of the core classes and preparing me to actually be able to do a dissertation. But why it was important to me is because the work that Suzanne Kirkreuter and that Bill Torbert have done, and the other people that have really been pushing the limits of understanding developmentalism as it's applied to leadership, is amazing, amazing work, and it's an incredible foundation for helping us to understand the reality of the workspace and the reality of consciousness in the leadership space. And however, there's very, very, very little data on what people with a very late stage action logic or with a very developed worldview actually do. And I was fortunate enough to be able to get together a group of people who were not only leaders and change agents, but they were also the largest sample of late-stage action logics that's ever been studied around leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And so this research essentially, while it is, of course, like all research, its initial set of propositions for the way people engage and the way people think, it is at the same time shining light into an area that has never really been articulated very well. So it's like I looked into the mystery of late-stage consciousness and began to uncover what are some of the core elements of how it actually engages. And the reason that was important for me is because I find that one of the most powerful things that's been of service to the development of my own consciousness has been able to not only see a map of the development of consciousness, such as the integral framework, but also to be able to see what it's actually like in person and what it's actually what it actually looks like in action, right? And so this essentially lays out a lot of those details that we haven't ever had before. I think that there's brilliant work that's been done by Bill Joyner and Stephen Josephs with the leadership agility work that people should check out. And obviously Torbert has done amazing work on this, and there's really interesting work being done in this arena, and I feel like I've been able to contribute in a way that also helps to bring this developmental perspective on leadership into the mainstream literature. Because so much of the leadership work that's being done out there is unfortunately ignorant of the power of developmentalism and the power that understanding the development of consciousness actually gives to understanding leadership. And so here's the really fascinating thing that I found when I went and actually did the deep sort of literature review of the leadership literature and the sustainability leadership literature in particular, is that lots of folks talk about what the future of leadership looks like and the sort of capacities that we need to address these large-scale challenges that we face. Mm. Lots of people are talking about that. And I kind of went through and made these big lists of all the different competencies that folks said that we needed to have and all the different capacities that they said they needed to have. And then I went and I looked at the developmental psychology research, and I looked at the capacities that come on board as people develop their consciousness and what happens when they end up in these sort of later stages of consciousness development. And lo and behold, there's deep, deep alignment, meaning the very capacities that people are intuiting are needed in the future for leadership to handle the complexity that we engage in are the very same capacities that are show up when you actually develop your consciousness to these later stages. So, of course, there's not exact alignment across all of them, but there was enough of a pattern there that I was like, wow, there is a real need to understand that basically what got you here won't get you there, as Marshall Goldsmith says in his famous coaching book, and that we need to bring on new capacities in order to address the leadership challenges of tomorrow. And those capacities are accessible by doing deep human development. They come on board. The depths of human potential start to be unlocked as we do the real inquiry and the real work on ourselves that open us up into a later stage action logic, a more developed worldview. So it was just fascinating for me to make those connections and to be able to get that into the mainstream academic literature so that future leadership development programs that are built will have to essentially take this sort of data into account.
So this whole developmental piece of this conversation around business and consciousness is a key one, and one that we've spoken into with several of the people in this series. Some of the people you mentioned, Torbert, Susanka Kreuter, Bill Joyner mentioned it, Bob Anderson was very articulate as well. And Bob Anderson was saying a very similar thing to you, which is this idea that, well, the leadership literature is indeed asking for things that only come on board at certain levels. So this is one of our ideas to help bring this developmental piece of the puzzle out more into the mainstream world through this series and other ways. So I'm interested in what kind of reception is your work getting? Is it getting mainstream exposure or other people's work in this area? Is this becoming more mainstream or is this still very niche?
So I have been actually, I think, blessed to be producing this material at a time when there's an incredible hunger for this sort of information. And while my dissertation has yet to be formally released into the academic community, I've had the opportunity to present it already in a number of venues ranging from business schools to leadership development programs to academic conferences. And so what I'm finding is that people are really, really hungry for this. I was up at the Blekinge Institute of Technology in Karlskrona, Sweden, a couple of weeks ago, teaching to their master's degree students in sustainability leadership, and they were absolutely floored and blown away and so hungry for these insights, because it helps them to add a crucial piece of the puzzle of their own development, is to really see that they can develop themselves and that there are people who are operating from incredible depths of being, and this is what they're doing, and I can learn to do that myself. Mm. So from a real sort of engaging with audiences, in the number of times that I've presented this, people are really, really excited about it. And then I am going next week to Ashridge Business University to present at their conference on organizational transformation and sustainability, and that's linked in with a mainstream academic journal called the Journal of Management Development. And that is, and it's also linked in with the Journal of Organizational Change. And they were ecstatic when I actually submitted this proposal to present, and said that this really could be the potential for being a centerpiece in an entire journal issue that we're doing around this overall topic, because no one is making these sorts of connections that they're coming across in the literature, meaning... Let me clarify that. Meaning that they are seeing how valid and important these connections are, and how this developmental piece is really, really important. And so I feel that it really is blossoming in good ways. And I'm one voice out there with a number of other people who are chipping away at doing this. And it essentially will be, I think, an inevitable component of doing real deep leadership development work is to embed in the development programs and embed in organizational structures what Torbert calls liberating structures, right? The ability to actually support the development of consciousness while working, while actually going through leadership development. So I'm very, very positive that this is the right time for this. Due to the receptivity that I see from the business leaders that I share it with, the change agents that are in leadership development programs and master's degrees, and also the academics that are looking at it as well. Mm.
So I'm interested to dive into a little bit of what you found in this PhD. So where I'd like to start is, could you paint a picture of, so these people, that I love that quote that you said, you were measuring as complex a worldview as science can measure. So could you paint a picture of what these people with this incredibly complex worldview, how are they engaging their work? You know, what are they doing with their time? How are they acting?
Sure. So first of all, for those of you that know the Action Logics model, I was working with folks who hold a strategist or a alchemist or a ironist Action Logic. So those are the three latest Action Logics. And for folks that are tuned in with Ken Wilber's developmental level and his spectrum of consciousness, that's essentially teal and turquoise and I believe
indigo, right?
Indigo. It's the next one after that. Thank you. So here's a snapshot of these folks. So first of all, they have this powerful commitment internally to their work, that they see their work as a spiritual practice. So it's not that the people in your life get in the way of your spiritual practice. They are your spiritual practice. It's not that your work gets in the way of your spiritual practice. It is your spiritual practice. Mm. And some of them frame their work as karma yoga. Some of them frame their work from a Buddhist perspective. Some of them frame their work from a Christian mysticism perspective. And some of them work kind of trans-lineage with respect to their own spiritual practice. But bar none, every single person that I assessed that had a late-stage Action Logic also had a deep spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was fascinating to not only see that, but to see that they completely grounded their work in that spiritual practice, that there was no separation. And another thing that they did was that they have this powerful trust and willingness to embrace uncertainty, meaning that they are willing to stand on the edge of the abyss of complexity, of the challenges that they face, of the very next moment, not knowing what's going to happen, and lean into it in a way that allows them to sense into the next moment and what's going to arise and what's the next developmentally appropriate move, and then act into that, as opposed to contracting around, not knowing, contracting around the ambiguity. They rather use ambiguity as a tool to catalyze creativity. And so they were able to do this not because they had some sort of magical way of seeing into the future, largely because of their spiritual practice, they completely believed in not only themselves, but also the people that they were working with, because these were always multi-stakeholder groups and teams that they were really driving for these complex initiatives, but also the process. And so by deeply embracing uncertainty with trust in themselves and others and the process, they knew that they would be able to navigate through the ambiguity and the uncertainty. They knew that they could essentially chart a course through the crashing waves and the rocks and all of the challenges that they were going to face without needing to know how. And by not imposing on the future the "this is how we're going to do it," that they were then able to listen very closely, dropping all of the constructs of "this is the way it should be," listen closely to what is organically arising. And that kind of feeds into the other way that these folks engaged, meaning that they tended to use three frameworks for understanding the complexity of the world around them. They use systems theory, complexity theory, and integral theory. And so if you want to be a kind of a powerful leader, it's important that you have some decent familiarity with systems theory and complexity theory and integral theory as it's applied to leadership. And what the complexity theory brings forth is this recognition that we're working with complex adaptive systems is the key phrase in complexity theory, which means that if you're working with an organization or if you're working with a large multi-stakeholder group trying to drive forward some sort of global initiative, that fundamentally you're operating with a complex adaptive system. And what that basically means is that it's complex, meaning there's lots of different pieces involved that are all dynamic and all moving, and It's adaptive, meaning all of the individuals within that system are learning from each other, interacting with each other, and essentially influencing each other. So there's this constant sort of dynamism and movement with it. And, of course, it's a system. And the reality around a complex adaptive system is that there's no way that you can understand how to get it to go from point A to point B. You can't do some sort of system dynamics modeling on it and figure out what are all the flows and stocks and what are the different leverage points that you can push on that'll get an organization to go from being stage one sustainable to stage two sustainable, or that'll get a multi-stakeholder initiative to go from being out of alignment to fully aligned. And that means that folks needed to relax out of this knowing space and then pay deep attention to what is the next developmentally appropriate move for the individuals and the organization and the system that I'm working with, and tune into not forcing that to happen, but rather creating the conditions that would support that to happen. So a big piece around complexity leadership theory is that you can't control the system to go from point A to point B, but what you can do is you can put in the initial conditions that support the emergence of novelty. So the emergence of a new way of being for that individual or for that organization or for that system. So in this case, the emergence of a fully aligned organizational strategy for a global multinational. Right? You can't get the organization to fully do that on its own, but you can create the conditions that will allow the ongoing organic movement of and development of the organization to end up at that outcome, right? And so they were doing stuff like that. They were using these different frameworks to essentially understand the complexity of the situation, not try and force it to change, put in the right conditions that then support it to move toward its potential. Now, let me take a break because I think that you have a little bit of a comment or a question, because I'd like to frame out kind of part B of what these leaders look like, and I'll do that in just a moment.
Actually bringing up quite a few questions, but I'm also, I would love to get the whole picture, and then we can take that whole picture and dive into that. So great. For me, it would be okay if you can just give us the rest of your findings. And
sure.
Yes, loving it. So
that sounds good. Okay, good. So essentially, continuing on with kind of describing the way that these leaders worked in action, they also tended to tune into the subtle energy of the work that they were doing. So remember, some of the folks that I interviewed, the alchemists and the ironists, so at the latest stages of this developmental psychology assessment, they are embedded in unity consciousness, meaning that they have a unitive understanding of reality. The alchemist is kind of the early stage of that, and the ironist is maybe the middle stage of that. And so that means that they had the capacity to drop into these state experiences where they literally experienced the organization that they were working with from a unity perspective, meaning that they were not only analyzing it and looking at it, and they were not only looking through the different eyes of the stakeholders, but they were also able to look as it, meaning that they were able to deeply open up their own awareness such that they were literally one with the system that they were working with, and of course everything else, and tune into what is the developmental arc right now. And once they got a whisper of what that was and what is the next sort of micro-developmental move for this individual or this organization or this large-scale multi-stakeholder system that I'm working with. Then they did this amazing thing, which was fascinating to me, is that they would literally hold the energetic potential for the individual or the organization or the large-scale system to evolve into that next developmental space.
Can you say that once again?
Sure. So what they would do is they would get clear about what the next developmental move would be for an organization, for example. And then they would hold the energetic potential. So they would essentially visualize and feel the potential of that and essentially invite the organization or invite the individual or invite the multi-stakeholder system to develop in that way. It's like it's space holding, right? Mm-hmm. You've been a facilitator and you know what it's like to actually hold the space during conflict, during interaction, and hold the space for that group to come to alignment, right? And that's the real work of facilitation. And for one of the people I interviewed said, that's the real work of being a change agent, is holding that energetic potential while all of the individuals are engaging and doing their stuff, holding the energetic potential for what they can become.
But doing it not just with one individual in conversation or even with a group of people that you're facilitating in a room, but actually doing it for a whole
The whole initiative that they were working on, right? Mm-hmm. Which varied. So literally holding that energetic potential, which is something, again, that they could uniquely do because they were holding these late-stage action logics, and their worldview gives them sort of the capacity to do that. Mm-hmm. And that... And then they said, essentially, I would hold the energetic potential and then allow the integrative nature of consciousness to do its thing. Meaning, instead of trying to push it and prod it to be different, instead of trying to really kind of catalyze and drive someone to act differently or getting a team to be loyal or to be more effective and be more productive, or in the cases that I've been working in, essentially getting an entire multi-stakeholder system to invest tens of millions of euros in building these large-scale sustainability programs with government and business and civil society to advance the Millennium Development Goals, right? Instead of trying to force that to happen, these folks were essentially inviting that development to happen, recognizing that development is happening so fast in this complex adaptive system that they really needed to kind of get out of the way, but at the same time hold the potential for what could arise there. So, like, it's this co-creative engagement that they did with the universe, frankly. Is that they created a potential in the same way that an Olympic athlete, before they're about to do that high dive, they visualize very deeply that they're going to nail it. They're holding the potential for their body-mind to go through the movements and the mechanisms to hit that with a perfect 10, right? It's the same thing, but these folks were literally doing that on a systems level and on a large-scale systems level. Mm. And, again, they said, that's the real work, and then you just let consciousness do its thing. So then I found that they also were deeply, deeply committed to development along the way. So every single one of them recognized that if you're really going to do leadership work, then especially in these complex change initiatives, then there ain't no way that you actually know how to do it. And let's not pretend that you do or anybody else does. So you're going to need to develop along the way. And so that meant that they would do intensive sort of what I call horizontal learning along the way, horizontal development, meaning that they would go out and they would brush up on what the latest understanding is of the carbon market and how that can be leveraged to advance a large-scale initiative. Or they would study how you know, the different financial markets and different economic models, right, if that was relevant. So they would actively go out there and push their own learning edge, doing this sort of horizontal development. And then they would also do their own depth work along the way. So that means tuning into what are their shadow issues, what are the real dynamics that are arising for them and the limiting beliefs that are showing up, what's their relationship to power and to money, and how is that getting in the way of actually facilitating this work and leading this work. Mm. And so they would do their own depth work along the way, do the deep learning, but then they would also cultivate that development in all of the others that were involved in the initiative as well, meaning that they would set up the developmental conditions for the rest of the team to be developing in whatever way was necessary to accomplish this initiative. And so that may look like bringing in external experts to share different perspectives. It may look like bringing them together to get aligned in a very deep way around the purpose of what they were doing and developing a very strong we space. And so there was this kind of consistent commitment to developing themselves and others and the collective as part of actually executing the initiative itself. As part of designing it, they would have to develop, and as part of implementing it, they would have to develop. And so fascinatingly enough, they often used perspective-taking practices as a way to develop themselves and develop others and develop the collective. And if people go into the dissertation, Chapter 5, there's this whole list of perspective-taking practices that they used that people can tune into. So in summary, essentially, what we have are leaders that are at their being, at their deepest levels, they're designing and implementing these initiatives from a very deep inner foundation where their work is their spiritual practice. They completely trust and embrace an uncertainty themselves, others in the process. From a reflecting space, they have this access to really powerful internal resources and theories to design. So not only are they using systems theory, complexity theory, and integral theory, but they also, and I didn't mention this, they also have this real deep access to intuition. And they're using other ways of knowing than rational analysis. So one of the leaders that I worked with, for example, told me the story of how he went to this very powerful leadership development program, and it was a 5-day program. He was surrounded by folks that were constantly challenging him to step into a deeper way of being and see the world from a broader, more complex way. And he came out of that, and the next day he sat down and he just started writing. And he kept on writing. And for 12 hours straight, he wrote. He couldn't stop writing. He just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote around this particular project that he'd been beginning to formulate. But he had this huge download for a full day. And he told me that he has spent the last 4 years unpacking the data that he got that day to develop this large-scale initiative. And so people are having these very powerful intuitive, or whatever you want to call it, collective intelligence access experiences where they're getting knowledge that's not coming out of their rational mind, but it's just showing up, and then they're using that as part of the way to navigate through the complexity and the ambiguity, because the rational mind just cannot get its mind around the complexity of what we're actually engaging with if you really look at it. Mm. So that's kind of the reflecting piece, that they had access to these powerful internal resources and theories to do the design and implementation work. And then finally, from an engaging perspective, how do they really engage? They use this adaptive design management, or this adaptive management that I called it, where they would consistently be in dialogue with the system to constantly adapt the work that they were doing. And by dialoguing with the system, I mean that they would constantly experiment and test and kind of throw things into the system and go, does this work? And watch how it responds. There's some great stuff on this that's called the Kynefin framework, Cynefin framework, Kinefin framework, that really talks about how to experiment with the system effectively in different ways of complexity that people should check out. So they were constantly kind of dialoguing with the system to understand it better so they could respond more effectively. And then they would adopt these different roles where sometimes they would be creating these supportive conditions, sometimes they would be holding the space and holding the energetic potential. And then finally, as part of really engaging in this work, they were consistently cultivating development in themselves and others and the collective. So I hope that that gives you a picture of really what consciousness looks like in action, what conscious leadership looks like in action, and people can dive into the research and really see the more specific examples. We don't have enough time here. But for me, it really is conscious leadership powerfully engaging.
And I'm really blown away hearing you unpack that, because we've talked to other speakers about conscious capitalism, conscious business, and also conscious leadership, more the individual aspect of that. And what I'm finding is that so often, we all agree that it's needed, and we give lots of reasons why that's needed. And there's some thoughts about what a conscious leader would do or how they would behave, but you've gone ahead and, in a really kind of structured and systematic way, researched what these conscious leaders are actually doing and how they are engaging with the Complex Change Initiative. So it's like this kind of black box of conscious leadership that you've just, gone ahead and, you've kind of put a flashlight on it. And it's a lot to unpack. I mean, obviously, we won't be able to get into all of those details here, but what I'm wondering, in the beginning of this conversation, you were saying that, this is a really important type of conversation to have. One of the things that we've been experiencing is that actually they're also very powerful conversations to have. Like you're here with us today in person. Mostly we've been having these conversations over the phone, but even then, having those conversations is extremely powerful, and you enter into this we space, and in a way I could say that all of us have been transformed in having all of these conversations over the past weeks. So what I'm wondering is, you've just described for us how these conscious leaders design and engage in complex change, and what was it like being in dialogue with these people that were, as awake as science can measure, as you were saying, or you actually were saying as conscious or as developed, but I'm kind of checking if you could say that that's also most awake.
Sure. So, yeah, these folks were really switched on.
Yeah.
Right? And so let me just make a quick correction here. Let's not pretend that I've kind of illuminated what's inside the black box of conscious leadership, because fundamentally this is a huge mystery. We still don't know. We're never going to fully know. Consciousness is always developing. What I have been fortunate enough to be able to do is to go trundling into that area and look around and feel around kind of with my eyes as open as I could in the darkness of that mystery, and bring back some jewels that felt real and that resonated with the people that I was working with and that I feel are useful starting points for a good dialogue about this going forward.
Mm.
And I know that there will be lots and lots of good research that will come out around this, and it may completely contradict what I've come up with, but at the very least we have kind of a good starting a good landing pad that if you combine this work with the work that Bill Torbert's done and that Bill Joyner and Stephen Josephs have done and the work that Keegan is doing at Harvard, and all of the folks, Otto Lasky, all of the folks that are doing really interesting kind of developmental work and understanding what this stuff looks like in action, of course, Zach Stein and Theo Dawson at Harvard as well with the whole electrical assessment system. There's tons of people doing really good work on this, and they all are bringing together pieces of the puzzle. And so this is my contribution to that, and I hope that people can then stand on it and go further with it.
Mm.
So you asked what my experience was as actually engaging with this, and it was completely transformational for me. I mean, I have had a clear and marked spiritual development in the process of doing this work.
Mm.
When I look at myself 2 years ago and what I'm accessing now, I'm switched on more than I have ever been. And I attribute it to certainly doing an integral transformative practice and meditation and taking care of my body and, you know, doing depth work around shadow issues and certainly spiritual inquiry and reading the spiritual masters that I've been reading. All that is part of it. But however, I had the opportunity to basically get darshan or get transmission from 32 global change agents and leaders that are really kind of at the cutting edge of consciousness, and 13 of them at kind of the bleeding cutting edge of consciousness, right? To overuse cliches, bring them together and make something even uglier. But seriously, right? So it was like this opportunity to be in this powerful we space with them for the first couple of hours of the interview, and then to actually go into the text and look at the language and look at how, you know, what it was saying and what were the patterns that were arising. And I needed to essentially jack up my own cognitive capacity to recognize patterns across complex consciousness expression, right? And so that was constantly kind of being in this very high state experience from a cognitive standpoint and from a self-awareness standpoint, because paying attention to my own shadow stuff as it's coming up, kind of just going through the data. What am I drawn toward? What am I repulsed by about what they're saying? And so it was truly a transformational inquiry for me along the way. I went into this wanting to learn some more about how to be a more effective global change agent and be of deeper service from a leadership standpoint, and I came out of it feeling like I have been through this two-year mystery school or something like that, where I've been kind of alongside these folks and in their worlds. Because I've looked so closely at their and what they said, and had, of course, follow-up dialogue with them, and so it's been a huge, huge honor and pleasure. And I would, really, the purpose of me doing this for the past couple of years is that I'd very much like to, I'd very much like to allow other folks to stand on the shoulders of this work and get that deep transmission, so to speak, from these folks directly by going through the material that I've pulled together for them. So it'll save them a couple years. And then, again, take it forward, take what resonates with them, go out and play with it, feed it back, tell me what you think is actually other elements of this, and collectively we'll build something that is ultimately a canon of conscious leadership in action.
That's a powerful metaphor. I was also just looking at time and amazed that we've already almost spent an hour of conversation. And there's one thing that I'm kind of dying to get into before we open the space up to our listeners for Q&A. And it's this. From your research, what can we learn about how we design, not so much maybe complex change initiatives, which is one thing that you researched, also not how we design maybe leadership development programs, which of course it's also, you know, very relevant for, but actually organizations themselves. You know, after all, you know, this is waking up at the workplace, and the organization piece is key, I think. So what do you think, you know, we can take away from your research in terms of how we design organizations for the future?
Sure. So one thing that organizations need to change is they need to take off the ceiling for folks that have these late-stage action logics. Because what tends to happen is that folks who are very conscious, like yourselves, and you and I have talked a little bit, and you struggle with some of this with respect to your own work, is that it's difficult for folks who are switched on to really show up fully as who they are and bring the full being that they have into the workspace, all their intelligence, all their emotions, all of their clarity, all of their wisdom. And so these folks basically just need to be allowed to be in the organization and, frankly, not have to play by some of the same rules and do their magic. And some organizations have a lot of trouble doing that. And that's why folks with a late-stage action logic tend to leave formal organizational structures. Lots of them go and they work independent and they consult into those spaces. So a fair amount of the folks that I interviewed were actually consultants that had done deep work within organizations and then just said it wasn't a space where I could fully show up. And so we need to figure out how to have that be acceptable, that there can be there's an article in Harvard Business Review that says basically how to manage clever people, right? And so it's worth checking out that article. And basically in it says you got to let these people have free rein because otherwise they're going to take off, and they can bring incredible power to your organization, but there ain't no way that you're going to control them. In the way that you kind of lay out organizational controls. So that, I would say, is one of the kind of the number one design elements. And I could go into a bunch of other stuff, but let's realistically kind of open up the space for some questions.
Cool. Actually, that makes me quite curious. But okay, you're right. We should give other people a chance to ask their questions as well. So, you know, this is when we transition to Q&A. I'll just give a few instructions for how to ask your questions. First, and a lot of people have been already doing this, you can ask your questions on Facebook. So if you didn't catch that, you can just click the link to go to Facebook and ask your question there. So we'll be getting into those in a second. The other thing that's possible, and that's also very cool for us, is that we can get you to ask your question on the phone. So we'll actually get to hear your voice, and it's quite nice. So people are often shy for doing that, and they just type in their questions on Facebook. But if you feel like you're having a courageous day and you want to actually talk to Barrett, then you'd be able to do so by dialing *2. And when you dial *2 on your phone, that will make you visible to us so we can unmute you, and we can have you be part of our conversation. So, Ewan, you're looking at some of those questions. You want to give us a first one?
I will. All right, there's a question here from Vonnie, who is asking, she's saying, I'm connecting to you from South Africa. Oh, it's a he. Sorry, Vonnie. I'm connecting to you from South Africa. Great conversation. Question, we are facing transformational challenges of an extremely complex nature. Do I understand that conscious leadership and the development of the associated competencies increases the chance of dealing with complexities in a system as diverse as the one we experience in our country?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Torbert spoke about this in his interview on the Waking Up the Workplace series, and you can look into the research, and they're all cited in my dissertation. But fundamentally, basically, you become a better change agent. You become more capable of addressing complex change because you can see it better. And you can see not only cognitively what's happening outside in the world around you and connect the dots more effectively as you develop your action logic or your worldview, but also you are able to be more clear about what's happening inside of you. And that's really, really crucial because as we deepen in our ability to see and understand our internal dynamics, we then are able to see it in others. And the vast majority of leadership work is what happens one-on-one, face-to-face, or one-to-many group interactions in the moment. And how do you show up? And we can only see that which we are. And so if you're not aware of your own contractions and your own challenges and your own kind of depth of being and the emotions that and the full sort of spectrum of emotions that you have, then you won't see it in others. And if you're not tuning into those dynamics that are happening in the moment when you're trying to engage and bring forth greater engagement in others, then you're just going to miss out on it. And so the development of action logics has been correlated with increased leadership effectiveness. And certainly Bob Anderson has been doing a fair amount of work around this, and of course Torbert and Joyner and Joseph. And so what we're finding is that that case is pretty much closed. There was some really interesting work that came out of the University of Georgia, Strang and Kuhnert, and the work that they did looking using Keegan's framework that basically says, look, in the traditional ways that we measure leadership effectiveness, using things like 360s, we see increased leadership effectiveness correlated to later stage action logics. And so I fundamentally believe that, yes, by developing yourself in these ways and the individuals that you're working with to develop their worldviews, then you will make them better change agents. I completely guarantee that. And in fact, that's what I do. That's what I specialize in, is building leadership development programs to help people develop their action logic. And other folks like Pacific Integral are doing amazing stuff like that as well. And I really believe that if you give me a year and a half with a group, or Pacific Integral, and they're generating transformative program, or they're generating transformative change program, that group will develop in their action logic one, two, potentially even three full stages. So that's the research that's coming out of the folks that are doing this sort of work, and I know that it's possible, and it's just a matter of actually getting these liberating structures in place in leadership development programs such that we can do this long-term development work.
Well, I'm actually really blown away by something that you were just saying there, that when you, you know, put someone or a group of people into a room with you or maybe, you know, some of the other people that can do this for 1 to 2 years, that they can actually develop, you know, 1 to 2 to even 3 action logics,
yep,
stages. Is that
yep.
Because I'm also reminded of this kind of, I don't know what to call it, I think it's almost like a rumor or that keeps going around that it will take you know, up to 4, 5, 6 years to actually kind of really shift from one stage to another in a mature way. So you're kind of challenging that in a big way, are you?
I'm not challenging it. That actually completely aligns, because that's Keegan's research on kind of the average amount of time that it takes people to make these developmental changes when they're just going through life on their own.
Okay, so it's not a rumor.
That's full-on Keegan's research,
yeah.
Robert Keegan's research from Harvard. However, when you put people in these accelerated environments, which include facilitators who hold a late-stage action logic that can hold a deep space and hold the energetic potential for people to develop into this and challenge that conversation, and it includes content that challenges them on a intellectual and a intrapersonal way, and then you put them in a community of practice of folks that also have these later-stage action logics, then they can unlock themselves into a deeper way of being. And it's really essential that I point out that I'm not in any way saying that I'm responsible for people developing as they go through these programs, nor is Terry O'Fallon, who's been doing this work at Pacific Integral, and she's the one that's coming up with this data of 1, 2, up to 3 developmental stage transitions in their 18-month program, right? She's not going to say she's responsible for it, but what we can do is we can create the conditions for the integrative nature of consciousness to do its thing, meaning that we can create these ripe, fertile environments where there's content and space and a collective that challenge people in all those ways. You want to take your consciousness up a couple of levels? Go do the Integral Coaching Canada program through Integral Coaching Canada. I promise you that folks that are going through that are going through at least 1, if not 2, developmental stage transitions, because I've seen the program and my wife is actually in it, and I'm completely blown away about the rigor and intensity of it. So folks are doing this stuff out there, but you got to put yourself in a really specialized, tight learning environment.
We have another question here from Juan Pablo Rico from Mexico, and he's asking, Wilbur mentions, Ken Wilbur that is, that it is difficult to have or find integral individuals, i.e. second-tier leadership or the action logics that you were describing, but that it is easier to have or form integral teams, maybe complementing individual psychographs into a second-tier collective one. What is your experience on this idea, and how would you suggest we can integrate these teams?
First of all, it's great to hear from you, Juan Pablo Rico. We've been in contact for a long time. And yes, indeed, that's the thing, right? You can't create these superhumans that max out on all their developmental lines. However, it is possible to create these teams that have deep capacity and then work together in service of actually executing as a whole. So we did that at this last organization where I worked, and essentially we were doing large-scale market transformation work where we brought together all of the people that had authority, power, and influence within an entire global commodity sector, such as cotton or soy or tropical timber or cocoa, and so all the multinationals and all the NGOs that have expertise. And we essentially built these 10 to 20 million euro programs to transform the entire market towards sustainability, right? The team that we built to manage those large-scale market transformation initiatives from the funding perspective. So I worked with the funder, right? We funded half of it, and corporations funded the other half. We had lawyers there, you know, people that had law background. We had people that had NGO background. We had people that came straight out of the business world. We had people that came out of government, and we had people that came out of other funding institutions, and we had people that came out of academia. And so we brought together different sectors to be able to have the necessary insight to really do this market transformation work. Now, then we also had a variety of action logics in those teams, ranging from Achiever up through Alchemist across these teams. And we would build these teams essentially that each had different capacities and were essentially tailored to doing what they did best within these market transformation initiatives. Now, I wasn't able to go so far as kind of to do psychograph analysis of all of the team members and align it in that way. But clearly there were some people that had greater interpersonal skills, and so those were the ones that went in front of the media, or those were the fun ones that went and handled the NGO that was freaking out and about to launch a major protest. And clearly there were folks that had kind of deep cognitive capacity and deep skill knowledge or deep knowledge around the content, and those were the folks that essentially would help to design the overall content and design of the programs, right? So that we did that, and I think that is absolutely necessary and imperative if you're going to work in these complex spaces.
We have a question here from John Montgomery, who is saying, you referenced addressing the shadow as part of development. Are there any practices, frameworks, or processes that you could share?
Sure. So if you don't own a copy of the book Integral Life Practice by Ken Wilbur and Adam Leonard and Terry Patton and Marco Morelli, go buy it, because it is foundational for your development and it's a core text for what I use in all of my courses. And in that, there's a whole chapter on working with the shadow and how to do it, including specific modules. If you want to do something right now, you can go to your website and type in the 3-2-1 process and shadow. And again, that's 3-2-1 process, and that's a very powerful process developed by Ken Wilbur and a number of integrally informed psychotherapists who are very familiar with shadow work, and it's a way to basically self-manage your own shadow stuff. And I find it super useful for freeing up the energy that gets caught around shadow issues. If you're wealthy enough and privileged enough to go and do psychotherapy work, then fully you should go and do that, because that's an awesome opportunity to go really deep. Even if you don't have any challenges, you can go really deep, especially if you're using it to drive your own development in a positive way. And so let me just stop there. There's a very, very good book called, I'm not going to get the title. It's like, there's a book on the shadow, and the foreword is, it's got a contribution in it by Ken Wilber, and it's got Robert Bly as a contribution in it. And if you just start, go to Amazon.com and look up shadow, you'll find this book. It's got a black and white cover, and that has all sorts of practices in it and all sorts of depth work around it. So that's the best work. Yes, that's it. And it's called, is that called Human Dimensions of the Shadow?
Meeting the Shadow.
It's called Meeting the Shadow. That's it. So
I think I own that book.
Yeah.
I don't think
read
I've read
it, Ewan.
So we have another question here from Martha McAllister, which I think probably plugs back into some of what you were also speaking to earlier, Barrett. She's saying, what are the conditions we need to create to allow the emergence of the next developmental level?
Well, that depends upon what developmental level you're working with, right? So, you know, Don Beck's always saying, who or what is developing into who or what? And so it depends is the cheap integral answer. But I think that there are some general conditions that you can put in place. And there's a very, very good dissertation that you should get a hold of that goes into essentially how to support the development of action logics and consciousness, and it's by Angela Pfaffenberger. And again, it's Pfaffenberger, and it's referenced in my dissertation. But some of the key things that you're going to want to do, in fact, what I'll do is I've got a slide that's just got all of these on it, all of these key elements, and I'll give it to you guys, and you guys can post it on your website so people don't have to go through a whole dissertation, because that's a pain.
Great.
But anyway, some of the key things that you'll want to do are consistently put yourself in complex situations, so complex interpersonal environments, complex relationships, complex work situations, because that really challenges you. You need to consistently be hungry for your own growth, because if you're just kind of satisfied with the way that you see the world and think you got it figured out, then do that as long as you need to, and then at some point you'll recognize that there's actually an opportunity to step into a deeper way of being that is going to require you letting go of your current constructs. And so you need to have that sort of hunger to grow and develop. Another key element essentially is to get yourself in a community of folks who hold at least as complex a way of seeing the world as you do, and hopefully a more complex one. Because otherwise, society and the average center of gravity society holds us down. If we're not in these regular sort of dialogue with people where we can show up fully, then we're not able to fully express who we are. And I have experienced this in an acute way in the workspace, in that if I'm just fully embedded in my work for months and months and months at a time, and I'm just having to constantly translate into an achiever action logic and sort of a modern worldview and just kind of business argument after business argument after business argument, and I come home and I don't have time to kind of, or don't have an opportunity to fully show up, which I can't do at work, in one particular organization where I was working, my growth stagnates. I just don't move. I just don't grow. In fact, if anything, I probably regress a little bit. And so if you can't do that at work, at least, you know, create a salon where you get together once a month on a Sunday evening, and that's what we're doing here in Amsterdam, actually, with you three guys are part of that salon, and I'm blessed to be around you on a regular basis. But do that, because here's the theory that I have. It's that consciousness needs language in order to express itself. Because as it comes out of the unmanifest realm into the manifest realm, into the gross realm, it needs to articulate itself through language first. And if that language isn't flowing on a regular basis of this deeper and more complex way of seeing the world, then consciousness has nothing to flow into. It's like, so to give you a very specific example, if you can speak the language of systems theory or complexity theory and integral theory, then you essentially are creating these riverbeds for the river of your consciousness to flow into, because it'll be able to essentially then articulate itself. Because these languages that have been established, these shared languages, are able to kind of offer that space. Writing poetry, you know, I've been reading Rumi and Hafiz and these sort of mystical 13th and 14th century Persian poets, and you know, just getting into their language and speaking it out loud is a way of giving my own consciousness a chance to fully articulate at a depth that it isn't able to on a regular basis. So that's a key thing too, is to kind of study those theories and engage in the poetry or the art. Just figure out ways to get yourself to be able to fully express, and oftentimes creating a community helps a lot. You know, certainly the take on an integral life practice where you are working to develop your body and your mind and your spirit and your shadow as four core modules, because development, the theory, essentially is that developing across those four different domains lubricates development for all of them. And it's like cross-training. And so it accelerates your development. And then the last one I'll say, but there's more that'll be on this slide that I'll send you guys and people can look at, is engage in practices to put yourself into altered states. And so those can be states that are induced from your own meditation or from your own inquiry, or they can be exogenously induced states, so engaging in some sort of sacred ritual that brings you into an altered state.
Or coming to Amsterdam.
So those things actually work. And I can say from experience that by creating deep meditative states and creating altered states, you unlock the way you see the world and kind of lubricate the mechanisms of your own psychology in a way that things loosen up and you can shift and you can grow. And so sometimes you'll do this sort of long work and not see any growth for a while, and then drop into one of these altered states, and pow! You know, this has happened to me recently, and you can really see big shifts happen. So let me stop there.
I think we have time for one final question from, I think you said, Narieda. She's saying, Barrett, what would, according to you, be the new organizational structures, frameworks, and models that would encourage and develop conscious leadership?
That's a big question. So I'm not going to pretend that I can give a rigorous and thorough answer to this. But what I would say is that you should certainly be aware of the work that Brian Johnson has been doing with the Holacracy organizational structures. That's H-O-L-A-C-R-A-C-Y, Holacracy. And so that provides a lot of flexibility for kind of good organizational design. And then other structures that need to be in place are, I think, a culture that supports people to bring forth the best of who they are at work. And that allowance of the human to show up with all of who they are is so, so, so fundamental. And so that's an uncomfortably vague answer, but I'm not going to go kind of deep into the description about how to actually build culture stuff, because it'll take too long, and lots of people really do great work on that you can track down. But that's instrumental. I think investing in real long-term leadership development work for the people in your organization is crucial. You can't just give them kind of a once-a-year, three-day event, or even a five-day event, because development takes time. And people need to be able to have continuity in their developmental process and checking in. So that specifically looks like developmental programs that are 3-5-day events a year with coaching, you know, group coaching calls in between, and if you can afford it, an individual coach for those leaders along the way, ideally someone who is coming out of the Integral Coaching Canada program, frankly, or New Ventures West, who also has an integrally informed program, or the Ontological Coaching Program. So there's some really, really depth work that and coaching programs that are out there that can support this. And So that's really, really crucial from an organizational structure standpoint, is to consistently invest in that. I mean, if you think about how much money organizations invest in kind of doing audits of what they're doing, and how much they invest in reporting, and how much they invest in, you know, making sure that they're compliant, I mean, it's time to really turn it up with respect to what organizations invest in with respect to the leadership development and the change agent development of their people, because it really is possible to do this deep work with folks, and it doesn't have to be folks at the highest levels of the organization, but there's folks who hold these kind of budding post-conventional consciousness, or these kind of medium stage to late stage action logics all throughout the organization, and they're hungry for this opportunity to be dropped into these deeper spaces where they can really grow, but they've got to be given the space to, and that's going to take at least a year and a half, 2 years of smart design, and that just costs money. One of my real commitments is to democratize consciousness development within the workspace. So I'm really trying to take, you know, I worked at Stegan, and we ran a $25,000 a year integral leadership development program that is very powerful, but not a lot of people have access to a $25,000 a year program. So is it possible to build these programs that where, you know, change agents, social entrepreneurs, people that are working at middle management can engage in them and really get long-term deep development? And I do believe it's possible. I really believe that we can crack the nut on this one. So Rand Stegan is online right now, and I just want to say that the work that Rand Stegan and Brett Thomas have done, and Wes Blair, and all the folks that are down there at Stegan is absolutely phenomenal in the way that they're pushing the boundaries around an integral approach to organization development and change. And if we could scale their work across the planet and combine it with the other great work that's happening at Pacific Integral, and the new work that's coming out of Core Integral, and Avastone Consulting, and all of these folks that are doing just brilliant work, and it's time to really develop a tribe of collective intelligence around this work, and bring it forward in a way that is of deep, deep service to the global changes that we face.
You know, let's just end right there, because I think that says it all, in a way. Also, incidentally, it's you know, about time to end it, so you know that comes into it too. The way I'd like to close this call is to at least give the three of us a chance for any quick closing thoughts. And I'll kick off myself because I'm really struck by what you were just saying, and I was just reflecting for a moment on, you know, the call as a whole and our conversation here today, and you know what my closing thoughts are. And actually, they are that, you know, we created this series to inquire into, you know, the cutting edge or the bleeding cutting edge, you know, as you fittingly said, of conscious business. And, you know, we're not done, but we've, you know, already had a lot of conversations. You know, right now, right here, you know, listening to you, the sense that's most powerful for me is, you know, actually we know how to do this. And in a way, you know, you actually said at one point, case closed, you know. And that kind of, there's a power behind that, actually. That, yes, you know, it's important to be inquiring into that and what actually makes it work and what is conscious business, how do we do it. But, you know, the way I'm going to be walking out of this conversation today is beautiful. Let's go out and do that work. So thank you so much for sharing that. And I'll give you a chance to offer his closing thoughts.
Duras, I just feel like there are so many things I could comment on. There were so many points in the conversation where I just felt this kind of inspiration of, oh, yes. For some reason, the one that really sticks out is what you were saying much earlier on about those leaders that you looked at in your research and their relationship to ambiguity. And that really struck a chord in me, and it's something that I'm exploring in some of my facilitation work as well, of this space of ambiguity and deliberately not even trying to determine what the hell is going to happen with something and just creating that space for whatever is going to emerge. And I find that, I guess, good personally in a way that, you know, it's not something that's taught to welcome ambiguity necessarily in all places. So it felt like a confirmation for me personally in a way that those leaders are embracing it in that kind of way. That really touched the chord.
Indeed, indeed. So what both of you have said is so true, and of course partial as well, but I think that they can be combined together in a kind of a perfect communication to this audience, and that's that, yes, we do have some insights into how to do this, and no, we actually are on the edge of the cliff, and it is a huge mystery going forward, and we must step forward into that mystery with trust in ourselves, trust in the people that we work with, trust in the process that we're engaging in, that we can figure it out along the way, and that we can truly create powerful conscious leadership in action. We're never going to know how to do it. It's never going to be a formula. But moment by moment, leadership interaction by leadership interaction, trusting in the process, we can literally awaken each moment such that it is a deep service to those that we're touching. And that is completely possible.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Barrett, and for sharing all this. And it's nice to be able, you know, when thanking you for that, to be able to look you in the eyes for a change and not do this over the phone. So we should find a way to do that with all of our speakers, actually, because it's quite powerful. So thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your wisdom and your insights. It's been a blast, actually, to be here talking about this. I do want to say a few words about who we're talking to next week. Actually, I think you know her. We're talking to Cindy Wigglesworth.
Yeah, I know her well.
Do you want to say anything, actually? Because I have, you know, some words that I could say about who she is and it might be nice if you could say a few words.
Yeah. So for sure tune in next week, because she's a total rock star with respect to understanding consciousness and spirituality in the workplace. She's been, first of all, you need to understand that this is a woman who worked in ExxonMobil for years and years and years and years and years and years, deep within one of the most complex organizations in the world, doing human development, doing leadership development, doing organization development, and now has come out of it and created a rock-solid instrument that measures what she calls spiritual intelligence, which is understanding spiritual intelligence. And the 21 skills that she's laid out in this instrument is really a very powerful way to develop your action logic, because you get clear about what these skills are and you develop those, and those are going to be concurrently developing your action logic. So it completely ties into all of this work. Not only that, she's just a beautiful and wonderful person. And she also was part of that whole Stegan community as a coach for a number of years, and is a wealth of insight. And I encourage you to check out her website, deepchange.com, and look at the way that she's doing this great work, and definitely show up next week.
Well, that definitely beats the kind of bio that I could have given, so thank you for that. That will be all for tonight. We'll end it on that note. So, again, thank you so much. Thank you to everyone listening in, now or in the future. Well, hopefully we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Barrett.
Thanks Barrett.
Thanks.
You're
Bye.
Welcome.